You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Okay, guys, the race is about to begin. Here's what we need to do. Here, take that. Take that. Come on, pay attention. There we go. Yep. All right, let's start. Okay, so here's the deal. We're going to have a little relay race competition. You each have a baton, and this baton is going to start here and go through the middle, this side section, and then go across there. Zach, come back down through here. I'm going to cross here and go back to the corner there. And Russ, you are the last person there. Then over here, you're going to start with this one, go your way back, come across there, come all the way down here, go across there, and then Caleb, Krista, if you got a baby, Taylor, whatever, you guys are going to be ending there. So we're going to see, you should touch each baton twice. You're going to see who can win, I don't know. But the deal is, everyone has to pass the baton. Everyone has to touch this baton as it comes through. You with me? You got it? All right, on your marks, get set, go. Don't throw the baton. You cannot throw the baton. Uh-oh, they're crossing in the back row. No, Zach, up front. There you go. Up front, yep. Oh no, they're crossing in the middle now. Oh boy. There we go. Oh, cross to there, all right. Alright, there we go. Oh yeah, good. Make sure Marcus gets a touch on that baton. Alright, do you know where you're going next here? Alright, that one goes across. Yellow goes that way, red goes that way. Back. Oh, we're about to win here. Alright, stand up with that baton, Russell. Keep going. All right, there we go. No, you're good. That's the end. All right, well done. You can't fade the music out. We'll just wait for the music to stop. But a relay race. I don't know if you saw that, but that was from the Olympics this past August. And of course, the Chinese team there had a hard time handling the baton, the handoff between that. These are actually official practice batons. Typically they use metal ones, and I had what I thought was a metal baton up in my stuff of like junk and supplies. Turned out it was a vacuum cleaner tube. But back in the day, you know, like vacuum cleaners were metal, and it was a metal tube. But anyway, the idea of a relay race, it's so important. And there were tons of different things we could have talked about when it comes to a relay race. Different instances, different failures. There was an issue, I believe it was in Brazil. What year was Brazil? Was that 2016 Olympics? Yeah, where the United States team in they were picked to win the gold, and in the preliminary round, they actually ran into a runner from the other team, causing a fumble of the baton, and the judges actually ruled in their favor, so they got to rerun the preliminary on their own, made it to the medal round, and of course ended up winning the gold medal. But there's so much that goes on in a relay race, and the way a relay race works is, if you're not aware, obviously there's a baton. And the baton is an important part because the baton is what passes the transition. And there are multiple what they call stages. You've got your first stage, which is first. Then you've got your second stage, which is second. Then you've got your third stage, and then your fourth stage. Your fourth stage is often called the anchor stage. And typically that is your fastest runner on the team. And, of course, there's different lengths of relays. There's a 4x100. There's 4x other hundreds. And lots of things that go lots of ways in terms of a relay. But the handoff of the baton is a kind of a unique part because most races are about speed, about getting to the finish line first. But if you don't have a good exchange of the baton, one, if it's a fumbled exchange, it slows you down. But if it's a drop baton, that's pretty much a DQ, a disqualification. Now, they've just for the record, they have adjusted the rules. They've amended the rules in the last 7 years to allow for a partial drop to continue to race, in case you cared and you were worried about me and my details and you're going to fact check me right now. But the handoff of the baton is so so important. And it has to happen within the zone of when the handoff is supposed to take place. And you can't throw the baton. I saw some baton throwing here. It must be a handoff. But the handoff of the baton, you could have the fastest people in the world. But if the handoff is fumbled, then the race is lost. And we're starting a new series today called Churchianity 101. And as you saw in the intro video, we're going to be kind of going back to school. We're going to be going back to school and talking not about school stuff like the three R's, right? Reading, writing, and arithmetic. We're going to be talking about what is it that makes the church the church. And if you're part of MC3, if you've been here for more than a year, you're like, oh, it's the fall, so we're going to be kind of going back over who we are as a church. I already learned that. I don't need to know it. And I will say, if you've already learned that and you apply it perfectly, then you are absolutely welcome to get up and walk out. Absolutely. But perhaps, or if you have a baby, you can also walk out. Caleb has not perfected it. But perhaps there's things about this that we need to be reminded. Because today we're going to be talking, and we'll get to this in a second, we're going to be talking about making disciples. And if everywhere you go, you make disciples, and everybody follows Jesus because you're near them, then again, you can get up and walk out. But we're going to go over this because I think we all can be reminded of these things and be learning more and more about who it is that God has called us as followers of Jesus and as the church. And so again, what we're going to be doing this week is going to be very familiar if you've been at MC3 for more than a year. But each week, we're going to kind of talk about why. Like, why does the church do what the church does? Like, what has God told the church to do? And then we're going to look at every week the second part of that is going to be, so what does that look like for us? Because there's going to be some big kind of principles. There's some very big principles that kind of that apply to, that do apply to every church throughout history around the world. But then there's some practices that we take those principles, and this is what it looks like for us. And just to be clear, and I'll probably say this in other weeks too, like, we're doing it because this is what we feel God has called us to do as a church. Why we started, we're coming up, on 14 years in October, because we're going by what God has called us to do as a church, but it doesn't mean that what we do is any better than any other church. The issue is that a church has these principles, and we are supposed to apply them and make these practices unique to the groups, the gifts that God has given us. So I just want to be very clear that we're not like, oh, we do it better. No, we do it in the way that God has called us to do it, and this is what it looks like here. And there are other churches that will do it differently, and it's going to look very different, and that's okay. But now the big thing is that if a church is not applying these principles, then that's a problem. So that's what we're going to be doing every week these next 2 months. It's just looking at, like, what is it? Why does the church do what we do? And hopefully, like, my goal for every person listening online, watching online in this room, is that you will go, you know what, I didn't know that. That's really good to know. And then again, taking it from knowing and going into applying it. So today we're going to be looking at this principle. And the principle is that the church should make disciples. The church should make disciples. The church has been called to make disciples. And if you don't know what that means, we'll get to that in a little bit and what that looks like. And so the point is that the church should make disciples. So MC3 has the C3 process. We have this process that we have kind of developed, and you'll see why, around a passage in Acts chapter 2, and what it looks like for us to do what God has called us to do. So we're going to be in Matthew 28, we're starting in verse 16, but we're going to be looking at Matthew 28, 19. So if you have a paper Bible, you can open it to Matthew chapter 28. If you have a YouVersion, Matthew's New Testament, so just zing all the way down there. And then 28 is the very last chapter in the book of Matthew, in the Gospel of Matthew. And if you've grown up in church, if you've been around church, not just MC3, but any church, you're probably very familiar with this passage. And this is what's recorded in Matthew chapter 28, verse 16. It says, "Then the 11 disciples left for Galilee, going to the mountain where Jesus told them to go." And if you remember anything about the resurrection story, right after he was resurrected, he said, "Go tell the disciples to meet me at this mountain." And so that's where they are. It says, "When they saw him, they worshipped him. But some of them doubted," which is also just crazy. We're not going to talk about that. But dude, Jesus was dead and is now alive. And he's in front of them. And they're like, "Yeah, I don't know. Are you really that guy?" But they doubted. And then it says, "Jesus came and told his disciples, 'I have been given all authority in heaven and on earth.'" And Kirk read this earlier. "Therefore, go and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, Teach these new disciples to obey all the commands I have given to you. And be sure of this, I am with you always, to the end of the age. And so before we get into like the whole passage and what we're going to talk about, I want to talk about the baton first. Because the baton is the main thing that is handed off from runner to runner, from stage to stage. And a little spoiler alert, that baton has been handed to us. We have been handed the baton. The relay is on. And it's being passed to us. And the question for you and I to answer is, are you going to fumble the exchange? Or are you going to take the baton and move forward? So let's talk about what is the baton in this passage. The baton, there's three things that we see in verse 19 and 20. The first thing is that the baton, you know, this thing that we hand, pass off and on, for us as followers of Jesus, for the church, for the early church, for the church today, is to make disciples. The first part of this baton is making disciples. And that's what Jesus says there in verse 19, the first part of verse 19. He says, therefore, go and make disciples. Make disciples of all the nations. And a disciple is not, and again, if you have some church background, I remember growing up in our church, we had a discipleship class, which meant like you'd sit in this class and you'd usually go through a book. And when you were done with the little book, you were done being discipled. But that is not what a disciple is. The word disciple means literally a follower, someone that follows in the footsteps of another person. And so Jesus tells, we're told to make disciples. And these disciples should be followers. And just to be clear about this, it wasn't just a knowledge thing. It was someone that actually followed in the footsteps of their teacher or their rabbi, is what they were called during Jesus' time. That was the Hebrew word. And the way it worked is that you would have a teacher or a rabbi and say, look, I think you have what it takes to do what I do. And that rabbi would say, come, follow me. And so the student would then follow that teacher. So they didn't sit in classrooms. They didn't have desks. They lived life with their teacher, with their rabbi. And they did the things that he did. And they followed him everywhere he went. And so it wasn't a matter of, hey, let me tell you a few quick things and then I'll see you next week. It was, let's live life together. And so a disciple would follow their teacher wherever they went. And a disciple was expected to watch the rabbi live life and learn from him and grow and get experience from that. And again, it wasn't a, hey, you know, we'll see you every Sunday morning for an hour and that's good. It was a calling to live like the rabbi. And so the followers of Jesus, the church has been called to make disciples. We've been told, make disciples, make followers of Jesus. And that doesn't mean, like I said, just sitting around and learning. It doesn't mean just having knowledge. It doesn't mean checking something off once a week, once a day. Maybe you read your Bible, check. No, a disciple lives like their rabbi. And so if we are meant to be disciples of Jesus or Christ followers, then we are expected to live like Jesus lived. And Jesus lived day in and day out with his followers. He lived every day, and there's an expression, an old Hebrew expression that says, may you be covered in the dust of your rabbi, which meant that you were following your teacher so closely that their dust got on you. And that was the idea, that you watched them as they lived life. It was like an apprenticeship, and you went where they went, and you saw how they reacted to situations. You saw how they did things. And if you were following Jesus, if you were one of his disciples, you would have seen him, wait, he went and touched someone that had leprosy. Nobody would ever do that. Why did he do that? What do we see about this? Jesus, everyone was ready to stone this woman that was caught in adultery. But Jesus said, if you were without sin, cast the first stone. So they're learning from that. Jesus walked on water, and Peter, one of his disciples, said, okay, if he's my rabbi and I'm his disciple, what did Peter say? He said, Jesus, call to me so I can walk on the water too. And he did. And we give Peter a hard time because like he got all nervous and sank. But nobody else got out of that boat. Nobody else actually walked on the water. Why did Peter do that? Because it would be fun? Because he could put that on his resume? No, he did that because his rabbi did that. His teacher did that. And so he thought, I should be able to do it too. And that's the way this worked. This idea of making disciples says that I'm going to be a follower of Jesus, and so I'm going to live like Jesus. That means I'm going to respond to hatred the way Jesus responded to hatred. That means I'm going to react to people that no one loved the way Jesus reacted to people that no one loved. That means I'm going to work to make sure that my life is free from sin as much as possible, rather than just diving into things that are wrong. Because that's what a disciple is. That's what a disciple does. And again, this word means to be a follower, to do what they did. And actually, you want to back up just one slide there for a second, just to be clear, too. Jesus here, he says, make disciples of all the nations. And this doesn't mean we need to make sure that there's a missionary on all the, I don't know, how many countries are there in the world? 200, 150, 300 countries? It probably changed just a few minutes ago because somebody had a revolution and now they split. But of all the Hebrew word, or sorry, the Greek word here is ethnos. It means of every type of people. And so for us in our situation, it doesn't mean we are to make disciples of the people that are like us. That's part of it. But the people that are not like us, the people that don't maybe hang out the places we do, maybe the people that don't speak the language that we do, maybe people that don't dress the way we do, that we are to reach people with the message of Jesus. So we are called to make disciples. That's the first part of the baton. And we did a series last year, this time last year, called What is MC3 City? Which isn't a word. But you can check that out. There's a slide that has the different series. But if you go to mc3church.org, you can listen to that or watch the live stream from that. But we talked about our core values as a church. And one of our values as a church is what we call disciplicity, which is also not a word, but it really looks good, and it fits the theme of everything else, and that's just the way I roll. But the core value says this: a biblical disciple is one who follows in the footsteps of their teacher. Therefore, we value living like Jesus, not just knowing about him. And again, for me growing up in church, this is a very different concept, because discipleship meant as long as I know more. Hey, I can memorize. I know all 66 books of the Bible. I can go Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, and go all the way to the end to Revelation. So therefore, I must be a better disciple. Well, I've got John 3:16 memorized. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. Okay, am I a good disciple now? Like, it's been this knowledge thing. But really, that is not what discipleship means. And that is why if you're around MC3, you're not going to hear us talk about being a Christian, because people that live in America maybe consider themselves a Christian. People that show up at a church maybe consider themselves a Christian. People that are like, well, I'm not Muslim, I'm not Hindu, so I guess I'm Christian. We don't use that phrase. We use the phrase Christ follower, because you and I are meant to follow Jesus, and not just follow him like, oh, there he is, but expected as a disciple to do what your rabbi does, to do what your teacher, your leader does. And so we are expected to be followers of Christ, disciples of Christ, to do and live like he lives. And so the question for you is, are you? If someone looks at your life, not today, not now, not with our hands raised and our eyes closed, but on Tuesday afternoon, after, you know, your lunch break got cut short and things were not going well and you had this customer that came in, are you still looking like Christ then? Or how about on Thursday morning when your kids just are not ready in time and they're going to miss the bus? And because they missed the bus, guess what that means for you? You're driving. Do you look like Christ then? Do you look like Christ when you're driving down the road and someone cuts you off in traffic? Are you like Jesus? Are you like Jesus when that person that is not really nice, that neighbor that is obnoxious, just does that thing again? Are you responding like Christ? Because as followers of Jesus, as disciples of Jesus, that is how we are expected, not just to live on a Sunday, but every day. And I know I've shared this before, but you know, it's really sad that the church almost has extremely sad that the church has a reputation for being haters. I'm not saying we don't stand for sin. We do, and that's for another day. But I remember having a conversation, and I've said this before to you guys, about waitresses, servers, in our local restaurants, and one in particular, but I'm not going to name the restaurant. And they were like, oh, yeah, We hate the Sunday afternoon crowd. Nobody wants to work that shift. Why? Because that's all the people that just left church and are out for lunch or dinner, depending on what you call it, or supper. I don't know. I'm not from I've been here 20-some years, but lunch is in the middle of the day. Dinner's at night. Supper, I don't even know what that is. That's communion? I don't know. But they don't want that shift because why? Because the church people are obnoxious. They're rude. They're poor tippers. They're self-righteous. They expect more. And so if we're following Jesus, we should look different. And Jesus has said to the church, your job, our job, the job of the church is to make disciples, not just knowing about him, but living like him. So that's the first part. There's three parts of this baton. So that's the one thing. Jesus is being handed off. You're to make disciples. The second thing is there's a call to commit. A call to commit. And we're going to come back to this in more depth. So I'm not going to go very much into it because we're going to talk about this next month. I think it's week one or two of this series. But there's a call to commitment. And Jesus says, okay, make disciples of all the nations. Then in verse second part of verse 19, he says, baptizing them. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And again, I don't want to steal my thunder from a couple weeks from now, but baptism was simply a way to identify you as the follower of a rabbi. And so a rabbi would say, okay, you're going to be my follower, then you're going to be baptized in my name. And again, I'm getting into some of this, but when I meet with people that are getting baptized, which we do have one coming up, and you'll see about that next week on the slides, but I usually talk to, like, when I'm talking to kids, you know, who's your teacher? And they're like, oh, Mrs. Smith. And I say, okay, well, baptism is like the day you started in Mrs. Johnson. When you started in Mrs. Johnson's class, if you were 2,000 years ago, Mrs. Johnson would have baptized you in the name of, you would have been baptized in the name of Mrs. Johnson. So everybody knows, okay, you're following Mrs. Johnson. She is your teacher. And that's what baptism was. It wasn't just a matter of saying, you know, we're doing a sales pitch here. It's not someone just saying, hey, let me tell you this thing. Okay, I told you that thing. Good, I'm done. No, if we're making disciples that are followers, there's a call to commitment. There's a step that says, you know what? Not, I didn't just say this to you, but are you going to respond to it? And ask people to take that step of commitment. And that's what baptism represented. And again, we'll come to this in next month. But it was a commitment to follow your teacher. It was showing everyone, yeah, I'm in. I am in. And when you did that, it was a big deal because your rabbi says, okay, then you're in. We're in this together. If you guys remember that really old movie now, really, really old movie, The Karate Kid, and I don't mean the one with Will Smith, Jaden? Yeah, no, not that one. Jackie Chan was in that one. The one with Ralph Macchio. But anyway, there's this moment where he is meeting with Mr. Miyagi, and Mr. Miyagi is about to teach him karate. And he's like, are you ready? And Daniel's like, yeah, I guess so. And there's this whole, like, Daniel-san. No. Do karate, yes. Safe. Do karate, no. Safe. Do karate, gesso. Just like grip. Squish just like a grip. Because there was an idea of, like, be committed one way or another. And this, when it comes to following Jesus, people, and maybe you've been following Jesus for a long time, but it's not it is a commitment. You're in or you're not in. And some of us need to make that decision. Like, because you can't go, guess so. I'll follow Jesus when it's convenient, when it looks good, hey, when it gets me some, I don't know, points for the National Honor Society for service projects. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying, I was a youth pastor for a long time. And I remember seeing people like, the only reason I see you here is because you need to get that NHS thing, don't you? Not because you actually are committed to following Jesus. And so it's a call for commitment. It's not a sales pitch that you walk away. It's actually calling for commitment. And, you know, I'm sure you've been a part of a really good salesperson, maybe. Someone has talked to you, and you before you know it, you're signing on the dotted line. And I'm not saying Jesus is just a sales pitch. But that's a good salesperson because they're not just saying, hey, they're getting you to commit to buying the product, to signing up for whatever it is, to walking away with that brand new Ford Focus station wagon SE when you've been married for a year and cannot afford those payments. But the guy was so tall and his belt buckle was so big and he talked with such a Texas accent that we just had to say yes. But anyway, I don't know what that was. I'm asking for a friend. So there was a call to commit. That's the second thing about this baton, is it's not just, it's making disciples, but then also saying we're looking for commitment. We're not just saying, let me just share this thing and I'm done, check. But are you ready to follow Jesus? So the third thing then is to teach to obey. And I think this is such a cool thing. In verse 20 then of Matthew 28, Jesus goes on and says, teach these new disciples to obey all the commands I have given you. All the commands I have given you. And the word here for teach, the Greek word, because this was written in Greek, this is the language they spoke, okay? That's why I'm talking about Greek. It's been translated to English. But the word, the Greek word is didasko. And it doesn't mean just to communicate information. It means teach to learn. So if I just showed you right here, you know, you can't see because I'm really short in the stage and tall. Here's how you tie your shoe, just like that, okay? And if you don't know how to tie your shoe, and you walk away going, I don't know, you know, whatever, he just did something down there. That isn't didasko. That isn't teaching to learn. That's just me communicating information. But if I showed you how to tie your shoe, and then you went like this, 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 you have now been taught because you learned. You with me? And that's what this word means. It doesn't mean just communicate information. Honestly, like, and Chris and I were talking about this. He spoke, taught over this summer here when I was on vacation, did an incredible job. It was his first time teaching up on this stage. And I said, and we were talking about this. I'm like, I don't really care, and I don't mean to sound rude, but if people were like, that was a great sermon, Pastor, like, thanks. All right. I appreciate that. Thank you for the encouragement. I said, but you know what's really encouraging? When someone says, because of what you said, I made a change. Like, that's teach to learn. That's teach to obey. And I'm not up here just to get a paycheck. Barely get one, but I get one. God has provided for us. I'm up here because I want to see people learn to follow Jesus. Because people need Jesus. We watched this show, this documentary on Discovery or Max or Discovery Max, which is all the same thing now, I guess. And it was called In the Eye of the Storm. And it's pretty powerful. And what they've done is they've got all these smartphone cameras and these different storm chasers and all that. And they actually pick a storm and then build a chronology based on all these different videos from people. It's really cool. So you kind of walk through a storm from different people's perspectives. And you see people getting caught in tornadoes. You see them getting caught in a derecho, or derecho is how they say it on the show, but at the derecho, which is a crazy storm that just brings this mass, like a sandstorm of wind. It's a really wild thing. Look it up. But when these people are in this moment, and they've got their camera there, and usually they're dropping their camera, one dude had his arm around the handle of a bank door. The bank was locked, had his arm around that while a tornado passed over. And you know what happened every time? Every time you saw a moment where someone was in the midst of that, they're like, I don't need God. I'm an atheist. I'm doing well on my own. I'm very satisfied, and I'm making good money, and I've got a good family. Nobody said that. What did they say? Please, Jesus, help me. Who else can I turn to? I need someone. God, help me. Like, and we're talking about people that suddenly, not that they started following Jesus in that moment, but when there is a moment of crisis, who do they turn to? They turn to Jesus. So let's offer that to them. Because they need Jesus. You need Jesus. I need Jesus. And so this baton is making disciples, calling them to commit, and then teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. It doesn't end when you say, yeah, I decided to follow Jesus. If you grew up in maybe a Baptist church background, there was always the walk the aisle. We were part of a Baptist church in Texas. Walking the aisle meant you made the decision to follow Jesus. But it doesn't stop there. It's teaching to obey. I don't care if you know the Ten Commandments. Chances are you don't. Just statistically, people don't know all ten of them. What matters is, are you living these things? that Jesus has taught us. Why? Because a follower lives like their rabbi. A follower, a disciple, does what their rabbi does. And so the baton is to make disciples, call people to commit, and teach them to obey, to live out what it is that Jesus is calling us to live. And so that's the baton. The baton that you have been passed around here, that's what Jesus is offering, saying, look, this is what must be handed off. Making disciples, calling to commit, teaching to obey. That is the job. That is what is being handed from person to person. It's not part of that. It's all of that. So, now let's zoom out a little bit and talk about the relay stages. Because every relay, a 4x relay, has 4 stages. And this passage, and this is something as I was teaching, or as I was studying this week, I'm like, wow, you know, I know this passage so well, but this relay thing is just so, it's there. And so the first stage of this race is the Father. And we did a series called 3 a number of years ago. You can find that on our website where we talk about the Trinity, the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, and how they're 3 in 1. And we're not going to get into all that now at all. But it starts with the Father. And the Father is the one who is, Jesus is there, is present at creation. But it's kind of this idea of God the Father. He is the one sending his Son Jesus to this earth. That's biblical. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. And so the first stage is the Father. And we see this in verse 18 of chapter 28 there, where it's Jesus speaking. He says, all authority in heaven and on earth. Well, who has authority in heaven and on earth? Basically, everywhere there is. Who is the standard for authority? And the assumption to Jesus' followers here in this moment is, well, the Father. The Father, Yahweh, God, he is the authority. All authority in heaven and on earth. There is nothing that happens without God's knowledge. There is nothing happens without God's action involved in it. Like, there are no, like, oops, didn't see that one. God is completely in control, has complete authority, complete ability. And the cool thing is that this word authority, it means not just the ability to do something, but the right. And so, you know, if you're a person, if I said, you know, I want you to, I don't know, it's something I need you to do. I want you to go in and replace my water heater. If I were to ask you to replace my water heater, there's 2 questions that come into play there. Number one, are you able to do that? And as we took the water heater out of our basement this weekend, the empty water heater, people, it was empty. And these buff teenage boys and their even buffer father, it was so hard to get out of our basement. So there's the ability factor, but then there's also the authority. Because if you just show up at someone else's house and say, hey, I'm taking your water heater out, they might be like, whoa, wait, what? You do not have the authority to do that. You don't have the right to do that. And so it's the ability and the right. And that's what this means. Everything has been given by the Father to Jesus, which, spoiler. But the authority comes from God the Father. And so that's the first stage. It starts with the Father. And then it says, then the second stage we see is Jesus, the Son. And in verse 18 and 19, now we're adding a little bit to it. It says, Jesus came and told his disciples, I have been given. You get this? I have been given all authority in heaven and on earth. The Father has given this to Jesus. So now we're in the second stage of the race. The baton has been handed off. So you get this. Like right now, this is really cool because Jesus is fully man, fully God. The hypostatic union, a really cool theological term. We don't need to talk about that right now. But the fact that Jesus is completely God and the Father is completely God. And so here, all authority goes from the Father to the Son, completely God. That's the second stage, which is really, really cool. Here's the third stage. The third stage is now the disciples. So we're going from the Father, the Son, Jesus Christ, and now we're handing off to a bunch of screwed up teenagers that weren't even smart enough to make it to be a rabbi. They were only fishermen and tax collectors. Nobody even liked them. Nobody still likes them. And that's what they were. Get this. These weren't like educated professionals that have been around for 50 years. These were a bunch of teenagers. And so third stage, it says, then the, going back even further in the passage, then the 11 disciples, because Judas was not there at this point, he wasn't even alive. Then the 11 disciples left for Galilee, going to the mountain where Jesus told them to go. When they saw him, they worshipped him, and some doubted him. Then Jesus came and told his disciples. So we're talking about these 11 disciples. He says, I have been given all authority in heaven and on earth from the Father to me. Therefore, go. Go and make disciples. Now he has handed the authority, he has handed the baton to his disciples, to these 11 scrubs, these 11 screw-ups, and says, therefore go. Because the Father gave it to the Son, now the Son has handed it off to the disciples. And there's these 11 disciples, and he's like, go. And get this, like, I mean, again, I was a youth pastor for a decade. I've got all teenagers, actually I have less than all teenagers now. Two of them aren't teenagers anymore. But, you know, I've been through that era, and I think I got some great kids. I've had some great students over the years, but there's still this, like, but what's the safety net? Like, are we really, like, I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand because I don't want to embarrass any students here. But, like, we give 16-year-olds a driver's license. They get to be in charge of a massive piece of equipment and drive it at 55, 65 miles an hour down the road. Like, that's kind of crazy. But that's what Jesus is doing. Like, here, now it's you. Now it's your turn. Therefore, you go and make disciples of all nations. So Jesus hands it on to his disciples. So the first stage is the Father. The second stage is Jesus. The third stage is the disciples. And now the fourth stage, get ready for this. Those loser scrub 11 disciple teenagers, and I'm not saying they're losers because they're teenagers. They have plenty going on in their life to be losers themselves. But now the fourth stage is us. Us, we are that next stage because they did their job 2,000 years ago and were making disciples, and those disciples were making disciples, and those disciples were making more disciples and making more disciples. And here we are today, and the baton is being handed to us. And are you going to take it and say, making disciples, teaching, calling to commit, teaching to obey? Or are you going to go, you know what? I mean, I don't know. I don't want to do all that. Like, why? Does it matter? Are you going to fumble the baton, or are you going to pass it on? And this is what Jesus says in the continuing on that passage there. He says, make disciples of all nations, baptize in the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. And we said, teach to obey. But look what he says. Teach these new disciples. So now we're going Father to Son to 11 disciples. These 11 disciples are teaching new disciples. And that is you and me. If you're a follower of Jesus, that is us. We are in this story. Teach them to obey all the commands that I've given you this. And be sure of this. And this is why Jesus says this, just in case you're wondering. He says, be sure of this. I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Jesus is saying, look, this is going to go on for a long time, and I'm with you. And so here we are. Who knows when the end of the age is coming, when the end of time will be. But we are here some 2,000 years later because that baton has been handed off. And so it is our job to take it and to make it. I didn't mean that wrong. Take it and make disciples. That is what we have been told to do, because the first stage is the Father, second stage is Jesus, third stage is the disciples. And the fourth stage is us. That is what we have been. That is what the church is called to do. Every church in Mifflin County, every church in the United States of America, every church in the world throughout history, throughout time, the command is, the instruction is to make disciples. How we do that is going to look a little bit different. We obviously are sitting in a room where we have haze, not fog, haze machines and lights and air conditioning. If you back up 100 years, most churches won't have those or any of those things in any church. How old is air conditioning? Did they have air conditioning 100 years ago? Didn't you learn that somewhere?
Yeah.
They did have air conditioning? 100 years ago. Okay, 150 years ago? 200 and some years ago. I don't know. 1924. How about in 1824? They had fans. Okay, It looked different then, though, than it does now. Okay, all right, I rest my case. So, I'll just leave that alone there, Kyle. All right. It's going to look differently. And so the point for this Sunday, for today, is that the church should make disciples. So MC3 has the C3 process. And I just realized this moment, I don't even have my board up here. I usually have a board up here at this time of the year. So we're gonna go just screen only. But we have this process at MC3 where we, as a plant team, 2011. Is that 13? I thought it was 13 last year. Okay. Either way, at one point in the history of this church, we got together with the plant team and we said, what does it look like if we were to start a church to reach people that aren't typically reached, to reach the next generations? And we decided, instead of dealing with what the church should look like or what it has looked like in America, let's go back to the Bible and look in Acts chapter 2. And there's this passage in Acts chapter 2, verses 42 to 47, which is the first description of the church. The church didn't exist until after Jesus rose again and then left and said, this is your job, make disciples. And that became the church. And so we're going to talk about the C3 discipleship process. And then you're going to have a chance, so pay attention, to use the napkin that you've got to share the discipleship process with someone around you. We'll get to that. So just hold your thought. Hold on to that thought. So in Acts 2, 42 to 47, I'm going to read it quickly because we're going to come back to it a lot. It says, they devoted themselves, they being the church, to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe, and many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common, selling their possessions and goods. They gave to anyone as he had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. So we were saying this, so let's look at this passage. And if this is the description of the church, what is it that we should be doing as a church? What is it that this new church that we're starting, this Mifflin County Community Church, what should it be? And we noticed a theme. The first thing we noticed in the first part of Acts 42 is that we saw that they were involved in fellowship, breaking of bread and prayer. And breaking of bread is like eating meals together. They were spending time together. And in verse 44, it says all the believers were together and had everything in common. They shared life. They shared stuff. They shared meals. They were hanging out together. And then going on in verse 46, it says that they broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts. And there was this common thread here for the early church where they were together. They were in each other's lives. They didn't just show up once a week and leave. They didn't just look at the back of the head of the person in front of them. They were in face-to-face time, nose-to-nose, knee-to-knee, like in each other's lives, around tables. And there's a word for that, and that word is community. And so we were looking at this, and we've got this process. Next slide there. Is that the first thing we saw is that the church was together in community. They were in relationships with one another. And so we called that C1 because community starts with a C. And so it was a C. And so we saw that they were in community and we said, okay, if we're going to develop a church, if we're going to kind of plant this church around these things that we think are important, then we need to make sure that we have ministry programs. That's a fancy church word. It's not a fancy church word, but it's a technical term. But are we going to have programs lined up around this process? Because a lot of churches, and again, however they do making disciples is fine, but this is how we do it. But a lot of churches make disciples with hundreds of different things. And so it's so easy to be like, is that important? Wait, that one is. Wait, that's not important, but that is. But and you kind of, so we said, let's just focus on a few things and doing them well. And we saw that the early church was involved in the community. And so if we think community is important, then we're going to have a program. And we call that program Prime Groups. C to the first. And so prime groups are small groups for you to develop relationships with other Christ followers. We are unapologetic by saying, if you are a part of MC3, you need to be a part of a prime group. Well, no, I just want to show up. Well, this isn't the church for that. Because this is so integral to who the church is, to learning what is the church supposed to be. It is in community with one another. And so prime groups are a chance for you to be together. You're sharing life. You're developing relationships. You're meeting each other's needs. You're taking time to, in prime groups, there's the discussion of the point where you're applying what we've been talking about. Say, yeah, that's important, good stuff that Sean has said. But what does that look like in your life? Because I don't even know what your life looks like. I talked about Tuesday and Thursday, but I don't really know what your Tuesday and Thursday looks like. Well, what does that look like? So we said, we're going to create this program called Prime Groups. And so that was C1 Community. And the thing about this is that it's a process. And one of the things where we see, like, to be a disciple means you're doing these things. These are what it looks like to be a disciple of Jesus. You're involved in these things. And so because it's a process, there's like a pattern here, a circle. And the cool thing about it for us is that people jump in different spots on this process. But the first thing was community, prime groups. And there are people that are plugged into MC3 today that got their start in prime groups. They never showed up on a Sunday morning at first. So the second thing we were reading there was like, what else do we see in this passage? And we saw that they were devoted to the apostles' teaching. They were sitting together and they were learning from the gifted teachers that God had placed there. They were learning about the Word of God. Over in verse 46, it says, every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. And the temple courts was the large gathering area. That wasn't the home. That was where the church gathered at first. It was a large area. And they were together and they were praising God there together. And so we said, what do we see here? Well, we see this church not just in small connections and community, but we see them in large group worship. And they were gathering together. They were congregating together to learn from the teaching of the Word of God. And they were getting together to worship. And so we're like, that sounds like a good thing. What does it look like to congregate together? Well, we call that congregation. And that's a fairly traditional church word, our church congregation. There's a reason we use that word. It's because here we are gathered together to worship. And so again, spoiler, but if there was like, this is important, what does that look like? Well, we said we're going to do a thing called the worship experience because we want people. Oh, I said C2 congregation, right? Yeah. We're going to do a thing called the worship experience. And the worship experience is where we gather, we congregate to worship. And we very importantly and intentionally don't call it a worship service, because let me be honest, there are a lot of people in that hallway that are serving. Some of you are serving in this room, but most of us are just sitting, not serving. But we are here to experience God and connect with God and grow, not just in, and we'll talk about worship next week, so I'm not going to spoil too much, but it's not just singing. That is so short-sighted. We're like, let's sing. Now we're worshiping. No, we are worshiping right now, too. We'll get to that next week. But gathering together, congregating together to worship is important. That's what the church should be involved in. And I'll just be honest. If you're watching online and that's all you do online at home, you're missing an element of what this looks like together. Because you're not actually congregating. You're just kind of watching. And I get it. You're sick. There's jobs. There's situations like that. But be present. So again, it's a process. We see that this is a cycle that you can plug in. There are people. Is there another mouse? Oh, it's the cricket. Okay, you know, whatever. So we're gathering together to worship. And then we looked at the passage and we saw there's one more thing we noticed. We noticed that in verse 45, they were selling their possessions and goods and they gave to anyone as they had need. And then so the stuff that they had, they sold it because if there's a need, I'm going to help you. If you have a need, I'm going to help you. And then in verse 47 there, it says they enjoyed the favor of all the people. The whole community was glad that the church existed. Why? Because they were helping them as well. And so we said, if we think that's important, what does that look like? Well, that looks like caring. And so we have what we call C3 caring. That's the third C, because you notice they're all C's, community, congregation, caring. And we're like, well, what does it look like to develop a ministry around that? And we have a thing we call simply C3 opportunities, chances for you to care. And there's everyday opportunities in your prime groups. There's the meal makers. We're having a very intentional fifth Sunday in September, where it's a C3 opportunity Sunday where we can care for our neighbors right across the street at Kish Apartments. And so we said, that's something. And so these are the things that we think are so important. And again, it's a process. So everyone, you can jump in. We have some people that are plugged into MC3 because MC3 served them. And then they're like, what is this all about? Now let me tell you about Jesus. Why don't you come and check us out? Why don't you join our prime group? And so people can jump in. And this is what it looks like to be a disciple, to be involved in community, congregation, and caring, to be what Jesus has called his followers to make. And that's what we are supposed to look like. The other really cool thing about this process as we were looking through this is that if you were to draw a line down the middle-ish, and I know you can't draw a line in the middle of three things, but if you drew a line like that, Jesus says to his followers that someone came to Jesus and said, you know, what's the greatest commandment? And Jesus said, the greatest commandment is this, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. He says, love God with everything you've got. And that's what worship is, loving God with everything we've got. And then, now you're ahead of me. And then the other side was loving your neighbor as yourself, and caring in community is how we love others. And so this is not just the Acts 2, not just the early church, not just our process, but what it looks like to follow the greatest commandment and the second greatest commandment, loving God and loving others. So the church should make disciples. So MC3 has the C3 process because the handoff has been given to us. And are we going to take the baton? And are we going to make disciples? Are we going to make followers? Are we going to engage people in community, congregation, and caring? But that is what discipleship looks like. That was what it looks like to make disciples for us at MC3. You're not going to be able to walk into other churches and be like, do you have a C3 process? And they might say they do because one of them stole our website or our YouTube channel because they're named C3 Church. But anyway, that was a different story. But for the most part, this is how we do what it is that Jesus called us to do. And the baton has been handed to us. And it's our job to hand it off. And again, the question comes down to, what does it look like when you're taking that exchange? Are you ready to take it and hand it? Or are you going to fumble it? Or are you going to ignore it completely? Because God has told the church around the world to make disciples. And for us at MC3, we're saying, okay, this is what it looks like. We're taking that baton and we're going to share that with others. Because there's people that need Jesus all around us. And that's not just because that's a church thing to do. It's because he is the hope of the world. And we just talked about that last week as we wrapped things up with the King Me series. But would you pray with me? Father, thank you so much for giving us Jesus, for giving us hope through his death on the cross. Thank you that you have given us, this responsibility, that you gave it to 11 loser teenagers some 2,000 years ago, and here we are today because they did it, because they succeeded, and the church is exploding. It's exploded all around the world for 2,000 years because of those 11 people. And God, so you have given that baton to us. We are taking it, and we don't, frankly, we're probably better than a bunch of loser teenagers. There is so much potential that we have. And so, God, I pray that you would help us to hand that baton on, that we would make disciples, that we would call them to commit to you, and we would teach them to obey, not just to get it, not just to hear words, but to actually learn and obey what you have instructed us. Help us as a church to not drop the baton, but to be responsible with what you have given us, the responsibility of making disciples. And as we do that with the C3 process, help us to honor you with it. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.